Good afternoon. It's Thursday, the 6th of September 2018, just after 1 o'clock. Welcome to UK Column News. Your host today, Mike Robinson, and myself, Brian Gerrish. Well, there is only one headline, and that is Britain is at war. This is a truly incredible state, Mike, that we have a Prime Minister with a secret cabal of the deep state simply telling the nation that we're now at war with Russia.
Well, yesterday at 1 o'clock, we obviously ran the UK Column News, and while that was on, Theresa May was giving her presentation to the House of Commons. I just wanted to pick a few items out of that, Brian, and have a comment or two about those. So let's run through this.
With permission, Mr. Speaker, I would like to update the House on the investigation into the attempted murder of Sergei and Yulia Skripal, and the subsequent poisoning of Dawn Sturgis and Charlie Rowley earlier this year. This was a sickening and despicable act in which a devastatingly toxic nerve agent known as Novichok was used to attack our country.
So this was an attack on the country. Yeah, so that's perhaps an act of war. Perhaps this is why she feels that she's justified in suggesting that we're at war, but let's go on. She said,
in March, I set out for the House why the government concluded that the Russian state was culpable for the attempted murder of Mr. Skripal and his daughter. I also said that while we all share a sense of impatience to bring those responsible to justice, as a nation that believes in the rule of law, we would give the police the space and time to carry out their investigation properly. Since then, around 250 detectives have trawled through more than 11,000 hours of CCTV and taken more than 1,400 statements. Working around the clock, they have carried out painstaking and methodical work to ascertain exactly which individuals were responsible and the methods they used to carry out this attack. This morning, the police have set out how the two Russian nationals travelled under the names of Alexander Petrov and Ruslan Bushirov, names the police believe to be aliases.
Okay, so the police believe these names to be aliases. This is a very important point, which we'll come on to in a moment, so keep that in mind. But as she was saying there, they were collecting thousands of hours of CCTV, trawling through it, 250 police on board. Now, Craig Murray put this article out earlier on, The Impossible Photo, and he was highlighting two of the CCTV images from Gatwick Airport because the images look very similar. They've got the two, each image has one of the two suspects, but the timestamp on it is identical. So he was highlighting this. He was asking the question how these two photographs had identical timestamps on them. I wrote to the Metropolitan Police and asked them what their opinion of this was, and this is what they had to say. They went through two different doors next to each other at the same time. So that's their explanation for it. So let's look at these images in more detail. So this is the first one of Mr. Petrov, in inverted commas, you can see where he is standing relative to the various gates in that passageway there.
And the timestamp is the key issue there at second 43.
Yes, yeah. And here is Mr. Bashirov, who is also at second 43, probably in an adjacent tunnel, but seems to be in exactly the same position in the tunnel as his colleague. Excuse me. So yeah. I'm even choking on the words here because this is just so incredible. So while Craig Murray acknowledges that he was probably mistaken, or at least there's the possibility that these two passing down through adjacent tunnels would have reached exactly the same point in the tunnel at the same second. And
so just clarify this, Mike. These two have come through customs clearance. They've come into a common space, a public space, and then you go into these tunnels.
At Gatwick, that appears to be the case.
Right.
These tunnels exist between, or these passageways exist between passport control and baggage claim.
Right. And so the two men leave the customs check. They go through the desk. They walk across a space. Maybe they wait for each other. They walk together. Then they're separated by the corridors or the tunnel, whatever we want to call them. and they walk how many feet along there? 15 feet it must be, and they both walk at exactly the same speed to get exactly the same point for exactly the same second shot from that CCTV image.
That appears to be the case, yes. Yes, it does. So let's continue with what Teresa had to say.
They arrived at Gatwick Airport at 3 p.m. on Friday the 2nd of March, having flown from Moscow on flight SU2588. They travelled by train to London Victoria, then on to Waterloo, before going to the City Stay Hotel in Bow Road, East London. They stayed there on both Friday and Saturday evenings, and traces of Novichok were found in their hotel room.
I'm speechless.
Well, when I heard that, Mike Hampton say so we have, let's come to the facts that this is supposed to be Russian military grade nerve agent. These men have already seriously injured, killed a person with it.
Well, they haven't yet, because this was prior.
Well, OK, they're carrying this material and a little bit of it leaks out in their room, which is later found, but not a problem for them.
And not a problem for the mainstream press, who apparently don't seem to have realised that they didn't publish any headlines at the time about the what must have been the cordoning off of
a whole hotel
and the area in London where this contamination was discovered. Right. But anyway, we move on because today the Public Health England reiterated their, or at least they republished their advice regarding this. So maybe this is the reason we didn't see any of those headlines at the time about the hotel in London, because Dame Sally Davies here, we must remember, the chief medical officer, her advice is just simply wipe things down with wet wipes, with baby wipes. That's possibly what happened at the hotel, and that's maybe why we didn't get the mainstream headlines. Yes,
no, I was just going to say, I kind of keep a straight face here, Mike, because if I go back to my own military days, people didn't like chemical warfare exercises, putting all the gear on. So that's a full suit, rubber gloves and a respirator is not pleasant. If you're feeling a bit seasick and maybe you've got a hint of a hangover, if the exercise is the first day back at sea, this is not a pleasant environment. And we did all this self-protection with people saying, you get this wrong, you're dead. And now we've casually got a little bit of nerve agent in a hotel room, but it's all not to worry, because Public Health England says, well, if you're worried you've got a bit of it on your jewellery, love, just clean it off with baby wipes. This is cartoon stuff on a very dark subject. The British government is out of control.
Absolutely. Well, let's go on.
As we made clear in March, only Russia had the technical means, operational experience and motive to carry out the attack. Novichok nerve agents were developed by the Soviet Union in the 1980s under a programme codenamed Foliant. Within the past decade, Russia has produced and stockpiled small quantities of these agents, long after it signed the Chemical Weapons Convention. And during the 2000s, Russia commenced a programme to test means of delivering nerve agents, including by application to door handles.
Well, that's it. I'm afraid I can't stop myself laughing. We are to believe that the intelligence in this country is so good that we know that the Russians actually were, they had a special unit set up with different styles of door handles. They went to B&Q, they got a selection of door handles to see which door handle it would stick on best.
I thought it was B&Q, probably B&Q-ski or something.
B&Q-ski, yeah. Okay.
But anyway, let's yes indeed, but let's go on.
We were right to say in March that the Russian state was responsible. And now we have identified the individuals involved, we can go even further. Mr. Speaker, just as the police investigation has enabled the CPS to bring charges against the two suspects, so the security and intelligence agencies have carried out their own investigations into the organisation behind this attack. Based on this work, I can today tell the House that based on a body of intelligence, the government has concluded that the two individuals named by the police and CPS are officers from the Russian Military Intelligence Service, also known as the GRU. The GRU is a highly disciplined organisation with a well-established chain of command. So this was not a rogue operation. It was almost certainly also approved outside the GRU at a senior level of the Russian state.
Yes.
Well, it's just incredible. We the public, are not to see any real evidence. We've simply got state security services saying what they think, what they believe. And she repeats this in Parliament as if everything is turned into factual evidence. If you go back to weapons of mass destruction, we had the same body of intelligence evidence saying there were weapons of mass destruction. Of course, that turned out to be an utter lie, a fabrication. Somebody said she has soaked all this up. Is she actually bright enough to actually think through some of this stuff herself? Or is that true, that the Prime Minister has simply had an intelligence briefing? She soaked it all up. She believes everything that's been said to her. And then she trots it out in front of those particularly tired looking MPs as if it's the truth.
Well, I'm not even going to give her that much credit, Brian. She's had this speech written for her. She's simply read it. It contains inconsistencies within itself. For example, this issue of the names. How have they identified these two people? She said at the beginning of her speech, as we played out there, that the police have said that these are aliases that these two men travelled on. She hasn't told us their real names. She hasn't said that they know what the real names are. Bearing in mind there's now an investigation and an attempt to arrest these people, surely it would be in their interest to tell us what the real names are, but they haven't. Yet she has managed to identify that definitively that these are GRU officers. How has she done this?
We would like to know, wouldn't we? But at each stage of this Novichok incident, the public has simply been an aside. We are just given the facts, we're given the line by the government, and we should accept that and go away and just get on with our sad little lives. We mustn't question. I was interested, there was a bit of informed social media comment circulating this morning, which we picked up on. The comment was, rather baffled by the sketchy profiles issued of the two Russians fingered today. Who on earth puts out two wanted posters and puts in a footnote, these are made up names? I haven't seen that poster, but I was interested in the comment. One of the pseudonyms, Bashirov, isn't even a Russian name unless one regards it as a darkening of the vowel of Bashir, a Muslim name, of course, and one that's found amongst the Muslim tribes of Russia. If so, it's most likely Tajik, yet the mugshots are both Slavic. So we're taking this at face value. Seems to be some informed comment, but it's interesting that the public actually can come up with this level of analysis. My money would be on a Berezovsky type clique being behind this. So what do you make of that, Mike?
Well, I think that was one of the points we were making yesterday on the programme. This is the point, isn't it? Theresa May is laying the blame of this at the Russian state. She claims that this material can only be manufactured by a state actor. That's been shown to be false in the past. So who is involved in this? Here's a point, Brian. Around the Skripals, of course, we have Pablo Miller, Christopher Steele, Richard Dearlove, this clique of privatised MI6 operatives.
Yep.
We don't know what they're doing. This is some clique of the deep state at work around the Skripals. That has been shown to be the case. Of course, the same clique involved in the dodgy dossiers regarding Trump. And we don't know who they're working with or who they're not working with.
Yep.
So are these two people state GRU employees, or are they some kind of privatised intelligence operatives? What are they? We don't know. And for Theresa May to make statements saying that she does know, it is outrageous. She's going to have to provide more to demonstrate that she knows, or she's going to have to change her tune, really.
Okay. Well, I just picked up on Daily Mail article. It was this one with a big sort of screaming headline of Britain launches cyber warfare on Russia. That was the prompt for our headline. We are apparently at war with Russia, at least in a cyber form. Theresa May vows to cripple Putin's spy network in response to smirking assassin's Novichok attack on Salisbury. This is Red Top writing. It's quite honestly, I'm lost for words today. It is pathetic. But I was just fascinated that we have a very apparently very detailed article, but when you go into the article, all the Daily Mail is doing is weaving a story around the government's own propaganda. It's got diagrams, pictures, It's showing where these individuals travelled to and from and at what time. Basically, the Daily Mail reporters have taken every scrap of information that's been provided by the British government, and they've just regurgitated it to the public. So I went to have a look at who these top reporters were, and it's not too difficult. We've got Rod Adehali here. They will appear to be very young. This is from their Twitter pages, but young, smirking individuals, smirking in the same way that they're accusing those nasty Russians. So we've got Martin Robinson. He's about to drink a bottle or already drunk it. But he's
having, just say it's no relation.
No relation, that's fine. And we've got a Richard Spillett here. But I encourage people to go to their Twitter pages, scroll through the sorts of things these individuals are tweeting. And to be honest, what are they? These are not mature reporters in any sense of any sense at all. We've got Martin Robinson here. What's he got to say? Well, this is the sort of thing he pumps out. So he's retweeting the funeral procession of Kim Jong. So we could say this is in particularly poor taste, but what is the quality of the man advising Britain at the moment on what is happening around Novichok and the Russians? I don't get a warm feeling about this at all. And if you don't want to do Kim Jong, well, he's got a pretty important tweet about pasties in the...
Good.
Yeah. Well, let's go on through. Here we've got Richard Spillett. Now, this I found interesting because he's got a thing pinned, don't mention Zivor. So that's pinned at the top. You'll see why this interests me in a minute. But in his tweets, he's also got this breaking news, fresh pitch inspection at the Valley. Now, he's a keen football man, but this to me is particularly bad taste, that you're having a look at the First World War where people died, sacrificed themselves for free speech and democracy, which this young man has benefited from. And he's essentially making a joke of the whole thing. And if you think I'm being a bit hard on him, well, go and have a look at his Twitter page yourself and you can see more of this stuff. This is immature. This is an immature personality, supposedly now of a caliber to advise us on what's happening with Novichok. Here's Rod Adehall. And this is why I was so fascinated, because he's got the same pinned tweet about Zivor.
Okay.
So... is this a little gang of boys that get together for a few beers and have a bit of a laugh and decide what they're going to put up in their tweets? But he's boasting that he's done some of the high-profile stories about the Skripals themselves. So here he is advertising one of his own stories. And then we get a glimpse into his maturity. Oh, beg your pardon, wait a minute. Let's come back here. We get a glimpse into his maturity. Should come up in a second. I hope this one's going to come in. Here we are. Because he's basically picking up on a report that police security services using child spies. We've mentioned this. But he says if Alex Rider has taught us one thing, it's that this is perfectly legitimate. Alex Rider being an author of a book where a youngster goes to work for MI6, I think it is. So these, in my opinion, very immature journalists clagged together simply to rework, to embroider, was the description I used, the government's story about what's happening with Novichok. And if we describe this as cartoon, well, there was a bit of a giveaway there. But when I was looking at my web page of this article, I had this wonderful little advert for how to get rid of rodents using ultrasound devices. But luckily, there was a bit of audio attached to that. So one little mouse said, my goodness, Mickey, what if there was Novichok on our cheese? Did it taste OK to you? And the other one said, don't fret, Matilda, I'll get the baby wipes.
Yeah.
This is it. This is cartoon on a very serious subject. What is this, a psychological operation by the British government on the UK public, Mike?
Well, let's have a brief look at what the Russian embassy's attitude to this is. Here we go. And they have, of course, the image of the two suspects on the left-hand side and an image of well, some people apparently working in Salisbury on the right-hand side, and they've captioned it, men working on the, with the most deadly military-grade toxin of high purity. How many differences can you spot?
And this is it in a nutshell, isn't it? On one hand, we have this massive parade of people in this sort of gear around Salisbury, and yet we're told that these two individuals were walking around daubing this stuff on door handles, and we did drop a bit of it in our room, but it was no problem.
Yeah.
Well, while all this is going on in UK at the moment, of course, we've still got a lot of big trouble in the Middle East. And thank you very much to the person who pushed this article through to me. It's from Veterans Today, but the question is this. Did the Israeli Defence Force admit giving weapons to Islamicists in Syria? Explosive Israeli news report vanishes. And the meat of this was that there'd been a report which it was confirmed that weapons had been provided to rebels, terrorists in Syrian's Golan Heights. And this was reported on the Jerusalem Post. And then shortly after it was published, that article was removed. Now, Veterans Today said you can still see the article by going to Google Cache and reading it. But in fact, by the time I clicked on that link, it had been removed from there as well. Now, in this article, significantly, they also pointed to the Wall Street Journal. And yes, the Wall Street Journal had also been essentially saying the same thing. Israel has been regularly supplying Syrian rebels, terrorists, near its border with cash as well as food, fuel and medical supplies for years. A secret engagement in the enemy country's civil war aimed at carving out a buffer zone populated by friendly forces. So there was more there. And I can tell you that the article has now been confirmed again because a request was made, I think, by Russia Today to the Jerusalem Post. And Jerusalem Post said, actually, we had to take that article down because of censorship by the Israeli army. So Israel providing food, support, supplies and ammunition into terrorists in order to protect, supposedly, Israel from friendly terrorists.
Yes.
All of this carrying on while the nation, of course, is absorbed with Novichok.
Okay, so this evening, live programmes this evening in Crane in the studio at 7:30 tonight, Humanity versus Insanity. Ian will have David Noakes as his guest. Of course, David Noakes is the man who had been attempting to help people with cancer using GC-MAF. And he is in court in November over this issue and will be speaking to Ian tonight at 7:30 on Humanity versus Insanity. And then at 9 o'clock, Fracking Nightmare, well, Ian will be discussing the fifth injunction attempting to stop legitimate protest at frack sites, this time from IGAS. And he'll also be giving some good news about what's been going on in the fracking campaign. So get along to those if you possibly can. 7:30 for Humanity versus Insanity. 9 o'clock for Fracking Nightmare at ukcolumn.org/live.
And I believe that court case for David Noakes is in
November.
November, yeah. Right, okay. Well, let's come on to another court case, and that is Melanie Shaw. We've got some information on what happened in the Leeds hearing yesterday or the day before. Basically, she's been declared unfit to plead. Now, Melanie was seen in court sometime earlier in a very bad state. This was actually a hearing without Melanie being present. But essentially, the judge says that she needs hospital treatment. I'm just going to say that many people are very, very concerned as to what's happening around Melanie Shaw at the moment, because it's very easy to see that she could be drifted across into Britain's psychiatric gulag. So Melanie bullied, pressurised. She's had medication given to her, withheld, the wrong doses given to her in prison. She's been held in solitary confinement for about 18, 19 months. And then when she's in a destabilised condition, they attempt to bring her into court on further charges of of arson. So many people desperately worried this lady is going to disappear into the psychiatric system. I would say to our viewers and listeners today that this is a real possibility, but the best protection we can give Melanie is to stay on her case. And I'd like to add that there is an absolute wall of silence from Theresa May's child abuse inquiry. This inquiry simply will not engage with Melanie Shaw. They won't go to her, they won't visit her, they won't provide the means for her to give her evidence to the inquiry. They are stonewalling this lady at every turn. And to me, there can only be one reason for this, is that they are terrified of her testimony, which alongside many others is now pointing back at Westminster and senior political abusers. Now, a little bit more detail on the court case. The judge was a gentleman called Neil Clark. People who were present in the court say that he appeared very reasonable, so we're going to take that on face value. He said that no judgment could be made, as Dr. Quinn, who's responsible for Melanie's welfare, had informed him that she was unwell, and the judge effectively stated that she may need to be moved to hospital within the next few days. Now, I understand that that was talking about hospital, not necessarily a psychiatric unit, but there is that's not entirely clear. One comment that's been made to us is that there was no obvious indication of an attempt to get her sectioned at this hearing, at least. The date of the next hearing is the 4th of October 2018, and depending on Melanie's health, an interim hearing could take place on the 28th of September. So presumably that 28th of September hearing would be the one where we could start to see the state pushing towards getting this woman into the psychiatric system, where we can expect her to effectively disappear, and that will be another witness taken away from the abuse inquiry. Now, while all this has been happening, over the last couple of weeks, in fact, it emerged that the governor from Stile Prison, Mihaela McGuffey, has been suspended. Now, a number of complaints have been made about this, to this governor about treatment of Melanie. One of the most serious is that the prison prevented a social worker visiting Melanie. The social worker had an obligation to do that because Melanie is registered disabled. The prison refused to allow the social worker to enter. In fact, they kept her waiting for 45 minutes in the rain outside the prison before simply telling her to go away. That was one incident. There has been many others. And of course, Melanie has also talked about being brutalised in this prison. On the 22nd of August, this governor was suddenly suspended. Now, this was reported out by the BBC. Here's a tweet from BBC Northwest. The governor of Stile Women's Prison in Cheshire has been suspended while an investigation is carried out into an allegation against her. The prison service said it's standard practice that Mihaela McGuffey has been relieved of her duties while inquiries continue. There was another BBC report here. Ministry of Justice confirms Governor of Stile Women's Prison Cheshire suspended after allegation made. We've no idea what allegations, but we have reason to believe that at least some of the complaints about the treatment of Melanie Shaw have hit home. Now, a comment posted here, might have difficulty reading it now, but somebody says they all need suspending in Stile. Only a few older gentlemen officers fit for purpose in that place. Head of their security is nothing but a bully. It's not prisoners you fear in there, it's the staff. And I thought that was a pretty telling comment. It seems to be from somebody who's probably been in that prison. We called the Ministry of Injustice this morning, but there was no update. And I'm just going to say, if you would like to write to Melanie, here's her address, Melanie Shaw, A4126DE, HMP Stile, Wilmslow, Cheshire, SK9 4HR. Postcards are particularly good because they're simple, they seem to get through, and of course if you choose an uplifting postcard That is a very good thing. Remember, of course, put it over there, UK column has still got the specialist Melanie Shaw postcards, Treason Maze Britain 2018, Melanie Shaw Prisoner Why is one of them. But
maybe some of these need to go to the independent inquiry on child abuse.
I think that would be a very good idea. But whatever you write on these cards, reasonable, measured, polite, because this keeps the power on our side. If people write unpleasant things or they're swearing or being abusive, it actually weakens Melanie's case. But ironic, Mike, we're here September 2018. We're talking about Britain's psychiatric gulag, when, of course, a few years ago, we were all being warned that it was actually the Russians who were the only people who ran psychiatric gulags.
Yeah, indeed. Here's Matthew Hancock, who, of course, is AI bot for the Department of Health. He is saying that we love the NHS. That's the Conservative Party, of course, the Tory government. We love the NHS and are determined to guarantee it for everyone for the long term. And so what's he announcing here? Well, former Health Minister Lord David Prior has been named as the government's chosen candidate to be the next chairman of NHS England. And so Hancock saying Lord Prior brings huge experience to this important role, where he will help deliver the long-term plan for the NHS. The question is, what is that long-term plan? Maybe we'll get a clue in a second. Hancock said he is enormously qualified, having led an NHS trust, been a former health minister and a chairman of the Care Quality Commission. I look forward to working with Lord Prior closely. I want to thank the outgoing Sir Malcolm Grant for his service to the role and the NHS. So, let's just have a look at Lord Prior. Here he is. He began his life as a barrister. He qualified as a barrister in 1976, but he went straight into investment banking with Lehman Brothers. Then he went into British Steel Corporation, and then was appointed Managing Director of British Steel Service Centres Limited, and later Commercial Director of British Steel. Well, that worked out well, didn't it? Then he was elected as a Tory MP for Norfolk, in 1997, and he became Chief Executive of the Tory Party, then Deputy Chairman of the Tory Party, and then Acting Chairman of the Tory Party. And then in 2001, he lost his seat to the Liberal Democrats, and so he became Chairman of Norfolk and Norwich University Hospital NHS Trust, because that's what you do. If you've lost your seat as an MP, you move straight into the job as chairman of an NHS trust. What else would you do?
Well, you're perfectly qualified, aren't
perfectly,
you?
Perfectly, yes. Bearing in mind, he has no prior experience whatsoever of the NHS at this point, and really very little experience of anything. He had to resign as chairman of Norfolk and Norwich University Hospital NHS Trust in 2006, because he was arrested, as well as others, by Norfolk Constabulary, who were investigating allegations of financial irregularities at Cosston Park Hospital and also at a private psychiatric hospital in Cosston in Norfolk, where he was non-executive chairman. Now, he was subsequently cleared of those charges and was reappointed as chairman of Norfolk and Norwich University Hospital NHS Trust. In 2009, he became chairman of Ormiston Victory Academy in Norwich, so he moved into education as well. And he founded two free schools, and he also was chairman of those two free schools, the Jane Austen College and the Sir Isaac Newton Free School. And then in 2013, he was appointed chairman of the Care Quality Commission. He was made a Lord in 2015, he was immediately appointed as a junior health minister by David Cameron, and then appointed as junior minister for the Department of Business, Energy and Industrial Strategy a year later. So that's his background, and I can't imagine anybody more suited to becoming chairman of an NHS that's in a process of being privatised.
Good. Well, I'll leave that slight pause for our viewers and listeners to consider. We'll just pop in this one, the state of the NHS at the moment. One of the things that is reported to us more and more frequently is the immense pressure which people are working at, working under in NHS hospitals. We know that people who are trying very hard to do a proper and dedicated job are getting home at night absolutely distraught at the aggressive management style they're now subjected to. This is a very sad story where this young doctor hanged himself, and this was Birmingham Queen Elizabeth Hospital. Interestingly, not reported in that article, but this is the same hospital where a surgeon previously branded a patient's organ. It was their liver. This was reported in the mainstream press. Apparently, this particular surgeon, the case has only just come to hearing. He's been fined £10,000 and he's going to do a bit of community work. I believe he's going to carry on working in the NHS, but he was a bit tense, got a bit bored during operation, so presumably using the cauterising equipment, branded his initials on somebody's liver.
That's lovely. It does give you an idea of the type of culture that must be in that hospital, and if this is the mentality of a top surgeon.
Yeah, but not to worry, because everything's going to be privatised, and then it's going to improve,
yes.
Mike, as the profits go up. Mm. Well, we'll just end on the subject of trees, and thank you very much for the person who sent this in to us. Now, I don't know which newspaper this has come from, but fascinating little article. It says that one of Sir Rod Stewart's trees will be chopped down because it interferes with a new 999 communications system. The firm building the 4 billion emergency services network discovered the towering timber in the grounds of Rockers, the Rockers Mansion, is blocking vital signals. WHP Telecoms bosses applied to local authority to have the oak tree at Sir Rod's Grade 2 listed Durrington House in Harlow, Essex, locked to stop it disrupting mobile coverage for police, ambulance and fire crews on emergency calls. The 73-year-old singer bought the palatial 10-bedroom 18th-century house on the edge of Epping Forest for £4.65 million in 2013, but only moved in 2016. Epping Forest District Council accepted the oak was a landmark tree, but has now ruled that it has to be cut by 5 metres to meet what it calls public need. The 999 network will cover England, Scotland and Wales from 2020, I think that says.
Yes.
So this was from the 27th of the 4th, so April this year. Whoever read that article obviously thought, actually, what's going on here? Is this some sort of precursor to what we can expect with 5G and particularly the upgrade of emergency services through the 5G signal? If you're not aware of the dangers of the 5G system, then please start to do some of your own research. But remember, of course, that one of the key things we know is that trees will be chopped down because their leaves can interfere with the extremely high frequency from these new 5G transmitters, the aerials. And if the leaves are wet, they effectively block the system. So the picture looks as if we're going to see hundreds of thousands, millions of trees cut down in order to get what is a very dangerous system, or many people say is a very dangerous system, in two cities across UK. We'll keep you informed on that. Thanks very much for joining us. We will be back at the same time tomorrow, and I hope that we will have David Scott with us to give us an update on matters from north of the border. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.